You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. Today, in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Carly Alyssa Thorne. And Carly has a chronic condition called congenital rubella syndrome. And we talk about some of the choices and decisions that she has made in her life because of this condition. She has lived with this her whole life. I had never heard of this condition until Carly shared it with me. And some of the things that we talk about in our conversation include the idea of an invisible disability that's not apparent to the people around you, and the challenge of existing and thriving in a world that isn't always accommodating to somebody like Carly, who has frequent medical interruptions or pauses. And that is something that I think is helpful from this conversation for me on reflection, because it's easy to forget that that is how many, many people move through the world because it's not maybe happening to us. One more thing about this episode. This includes a condition that Carly talks about. I don't fact-checked the stories of my guests. I am asking people to share with me their experiences and their personal experiences from their lives. Often in the conversation, guests will share information that they believe to be accurate, and I take them at their word for it. I think about this all the time. I think about it more sometimes when people give information about medical stuff, because I'm not a doctor and I know that I'm not qualified to give medical information or advice. So always remember that this show is presented for entertainment, and I hope you enjoy it 100%. But if you want or need medical advice, please get that from somebody who is qualified to give it, and you get to decide that. And I am sharing with you that that's not me. So all that being said, let's get to the conversation. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Carly Alyssa Thorne, are you ready for a fun chat today?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. I have two warm-up questions. I start by asking all of my guests what part of the world they call home.
LA, California.
Oh, wonderful. What is something that you enjoy, you like, you love about LA?
The sun.
Love
the
that.
The sunny weather.
Love that. All right. So today we're going to talk about the choices and decisions that you have made in your lifetime because you live with a chronic illness. Now, of course, you did not choose the illness. That's not what we're talking about at all. You have lived your life with something that is called, making sure I say this carefully, congenital rubella syndrome. And I'd love to start by having you explain to us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, so basically what it means is when your mother's pregnant, she contracts German measles while she's pregnant with you. And they normally tell you to abort the child, which they did tell her, because a baby can be born blind, deaf, and with deformities and what have you. And back then, back in the 60s, there's like protocols and injections and stuff that they can do. But back then, they didn't have that. And it's most, if it happens in the third trimester, that's the most detrimental time to have it, which she did. So congenital rubella syndrome affects all your organs, all your bones, and all your skin. And unfortunately, as you get older, it makes whatever you have worse. So you just, as you get older, you have more complications.
So your mom caught an infectious disease. So that wasn't her choice either. So this is something that happened. And it's apparently was known to have adverse effects, and probably still would. German measles is not a super rampant thing in 2026. In the 60s, I think it was more common, because I'm not sure. You may not know this, and I didn't think of this as a... When did we begin to vaccinate people against rubella?
I mean, it was back in the 60s. They were vaccinating people.
Okay,
they
so were. Back then, yeah.
But
so,
I don't remember exactly when.
I don't either. So like, that was a terrible question on my part. But it's not something that a lot of people catch or have experience with, this condition. And then you live with this, you're not an expert. Is it something that shows up, and I ask this because it's called a syndrome, is it something that really is going to look different for each person that is living with it.
Yes, because depending on to what degree the mother and the baby, however it happened, you all have different problems. Like I'm blind at night. I have, and it really affects your eyes and ears the most. So like I have like five different conditions with my eyes. I have hearing aids, and then basically I have osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, there is anything. The only organs that are good are my liver and my kidneys, which by grace of God are important. Are important organs, so I'm glad that they're not touched. However, I pretty much have like a long laundry list of autoimmune diseases and stuff that goes on. And I've had 67 surgeries to date. I just had one the other day, and that's just an ongoing thing as well. Because as things come up, more problems happen, and then you have to make decisions about what to do.
All right, so I was making a little note when people saw, if people watching the video, they saw me. I was updating the number of surgeries, which has changed since the very first time Carly and I talked. You were born with this, which means that you've actually never known life any other way. And I think I think that's a challenge for people understanding and empathizing and being compassionate about your experience because there's no way you have no comp you have no other experience. But when you think back, this may be a terrible question, but when you think back to your life as a child, do you think that there was ever a time where you did not know that you were different from other people around you, that you were having a different experience?
I always knew because I was always sick. I was like the kid in the bubble. You know, I was allergic to grass. I was allergic to this. I was allergic to that. My room, literally, my childhood bedroom was hardwood floors, no carpets, no stuffed animals, nothing that was, you know, so basically no toys unless there
Yeah.
were wood. And I had a big machine in my room that filtered the air. So yeah, I didn't know anything different. It was just something that was from the get-go, always at the doctor's, getting two shots every week, you know, for allergies and what have you. I don't remember any time where it wasn't a part of my life.
And so a lot of people have allergies, dust, pollen, things like that. And so you were impacted by this, and then is it that your lungs were, you got a very bad respiratory infection? What kind of things happened to
Yeah,
you then?
so I have permanent scars on my lungs. They're called bilateral B curly. They're
Okay.
just basically scars on your lungs. I'm on oxygen at night. I'm on oxygen during the day if I need it.
Okay.
Yeah, your lungs don't have asthma. I've had it since I was a little girl. And I've had glasses since I was two.
Okay.
And then I also got scarlet fever when I was really young too, which made things even more complicated.
Oh
I
my
went
goodness.
deaf for like a month or something like that. It's just when you have the condition, anything else that you get is more amplified.
Okay. And so when you were a baby, your mom knew that she had had rubella, and so the doctors knew to look out for this from the moment you were born.
Well, that's an interesting topic too, because my mother did tell me, but if you asked her years later on, I never did, that never happened. You
Okay.
know, a coping mechanism, a way of living. She didn't want to, you know, deal with what happened. So as she got older, it never happened. But I always knew, and the doctors knew, because you could see it when you look in someone's eyes, you can actually physically see the rubella markings.
Oh,
Like
interesting.
black, they're black dots in the back of your eyes. So she could tell me it didn't happen, but I know it did happen because the doctors and I can see it in my eyes. You can see it on the pictures. They take photos of your eyes, and you can see all the black marks, which are the German measles. So, yeah,
Interesting.
so I'm aware, you know, and it's hard when a parent doesn't really want to deal with it because they're having a hard time coping, right? So it was easier to say nothing happened, that way she could live.
Okay. So you have had a bunch of surgeries, 67 in your lifetime. Let's talk about your childhood. How did living with this condition, you said your room was very sparse to try and keep you away from as many allergens as possible. In what other ways did having this condition as a child change your experience, do you think?
Well, to add to that, we moved a lot. So I went to 12 different schools in 12 years, and I grew up overseas. So all the moving on top of everything else, I was pretty much a loner. You knew you were going to be moving again, so you didn't form friendships because you always were going to be the new kid.
Okay.
So yeah, that compounded everything. So I was pretty much always a loner.
You were a loner, and then did you go to traditional school?
Went to private Catholic schools overseas.
Private Catholic schools. Did it impact what you were able to do during the day in terms of, being at school, participating in schoolwork, sports, things like that?
Yeah, so it mostly affected sports, and the rest of it. I didn't really have learning disabilities or anything like that. I was pretty good at school, except for subjects I didn't like, which I think is a typical thing for a child. You like a subject, you do well. You hate a subject, you do bad. Yeah, it's tricky. You just
Okay.
kind of navigate as each day goes. You navigate what comes up for you.
Today, so you said this impacts your eyes and your ears. Did you have accommodations in school? Was it to be able to see and hear the materials, or did was
I
that
always
something?
sat up. Yeah, so they always had me sitting up front.
Okay. All right. So here's a question that when I was writing it, it occurred to me might actually be on the borderline of personal, maybe inappropriate, maybe rude. So if it crosses a line, tell me. But I don't know that I've ever actually met anybody face to face who had congenital rubella. And so I was wondering, because there's some people when they have chronic conditions or disabilities, it's obvious to the world around them. They have an aid that makes it apparent. So they're in a wheelchair or they have a seeing eye dog. But if I met you in person, is your condition or your disability apparent to the people who are coming into contact with you?
It depends on what I'm wearing. I'm wearing a tank top right now. If I pull this down a little bit, you see a port in my chest. So that's
Okay.
how I hydrate. I hydrate in the morning with an IV, just like you're in the hospital, an IV bolus bag of saline. So I hydrate first thing in the morning and I hydrate when I lay down to go to bed. So the port is the biggest giveaway. Other than that, I have scars all over my body, and that's another giveaway. I used to cover everything up. I used to wear long pants all the time and long sleeves all the time. Except I have problems with some of my joints. So look, my right arm doesn't work fully. So I can't really wear long sleeves. I can't get my arm in and out. So for me, I mostly live in tank tops because it's easy for me to get on. It's easy for me to get off. So, but yeah, I get a lot of stares because I have white markings, like literally all over my skin. Like when you see people that have like white and then have normal skin color, I have those type of white markings. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. The name of the disease where they have that vitiligo. I can't say it
Vertiglio.
right. Yes.
Vertiglio, maybe,
Yep.
maybe.
Yep. Anyway, so I have that all over my body. So I get stares all the time, but I gave up on trying to cover up my entire body because I'm always hot. I'm always on the hot side. So I need to be comfortable, and that means tank tops for me because I'm cool. I'm not sweating. Otherwise, I'd be sweating my butt off. So I
Okay.
finally just stopped caring what other people stared, what their looks were, what comments were, bullying, all that stuff. And I'm just like, I'm just going to be mean. If you either like it or you don't, if you need to ask me a question instead of staring, feel free to ask me a question. Be more than happy to answer.
In my experience, that has been, well, I shouldn't say my experience. That is the training I received with how to interact with people who have conditions that we may or may not understand. And that came up when I was with small children and raising small children, because small kids don't know how to interact with people who they come across who are unfamiliar with what they've seen. They're curious and they don't have any training on that. When my children were young, I got some education on that, and that is the way that I was trained, was be teach the kids, and as adults, be sensitive to how we are behaving around people who might present differently to us. But then also, if we are curious, sometimes it can be okay and even acceptable to ask. Not always. It's not 100%. Not everybody wants to talk about their condition all day long. But we had several experiences with my kids and people who had differing degrees where I would say, "Do you mind if we ask?" And people were happy to talk about it. But the reason I asked that is that we have this concept of an invisible disability. Somebody who might need adaptations or support, or be going through a situation that is not openly apparent on first glance as they walk around. And it presents different challenges and decisions to be made. And so, some people, so it's a decision. How much do I want to hide my challenges from the world, or how much do I want to modify my appearance and my presentation to make other people more comfortable? And so this is something that you've made. This is a decision you've
Oh yeah,
made.
absolutely. It's been an amazing journey because, like I said, I used to cover my entire body up, and it got to the point where I'm like, it's ridiculous. I shouldn't have to cover my whole body up because you're uncomfortable seeing a port or you're uncomfortable seeing scars. And for the most part, I would say I categorize myself as invisible illnesses because if I was dressed, you wouldn't know anything unless that day I was using my walker or my cane. I do have a walker, I do have a cane. And there are times when both my shoulders have been replaced and both my knees have been replaced. However, my knees still act up. So occasionally I have to use a walker. So unless I'm having one of those devices with someone know, and like I said, unless I'm wearing a tank top that maybe I bent over and now this popped out. But if I didn't bend over and I just was wearing whatever, you wouldn't really see it. But I'm just so beyond that now. I don't really care. I just live.
How long ago was it that you sort of freed yourself from the pressure to try and cover it
About
up?
10 years ago, like
Sounds good.
in my late in let's say I'm 60 now. No, actually more than that, like 20 years ago, because I've always been also I was a gym rat. I was always in the gym. I lifted weights from the time I was 16 all the way up till about 2 years ago, and now I'm having problems with it. So it causes me more harm than good. So I walk and stuff like that, and I do some exercises, but I can't be at the gym like I used to be, and I really miss it.
Can I ask you a question about when, so when you were in your, before, so around your 40s, you made a conscious decision to not aggressively modify and show up the way, you covering your illness. When you were younger, what was the thinking in your mind about I should cover this up, or I want to present in a way so that people don't see it?
I think when I was younger, I was more conscious of being really super fit. I mean, I was super buff. I mean, complete muscles. And I think that was my way. And I think about it now, back then, even talking to therapists about it, I built up, it was kind of my way of protecting myself. I'm strong, you can't harm me. I also grew up with abuse. So that the muscles and being more male oriented than female oriented was more about protection for myself. And I didn't, this is the first time in my life this past 2 years that haven't had like muscle. I'm not used to it. I'm still kind of deciding whether I like it or not. I'm still adjusting to it, in all honesty. I'm so used to being really in shape. And it's been a little bit of a challenge for me, not clothes wise. I mean, because I'm relatively thin, except I'm used to being hard, not soft. So that's been very interesting for me to adapt to. And also
And
in
so,
relationships, I was married and divorced and widowed. So, a lot of complications, a lot got packed into my 61 years.
when you were younger, you wanted to put together a, you wanted to be perceived by others as being strong, and so that was the decision you made. And then in your 40s, you had gone through enough experience that you changed and you were like, I do not feel the need to cover up my disability and my injuries just to make somebody else comfortable.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I've been a speaker and on interview. I have over 250 videos up on YouTube. The point is that I've been in the public eye for a really long time, and I never really publicly spoke about the abuse or my illnesses because I was attempting to cover all that up. And then people are starting, but I was a public speaker, and people are like, you're such an amazing speaker. You're really good at being interviewed. You're really good at interviewing others. You should actually share this because, as we all know, when people hear things that they're going through, it makes them feel less alone. Like, oh my God, I'm not the only one. Oh my God, are there other people that have this? Right. So I finally made a conscious decision 2 years ago when people kept asking me, you need to write a book. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I've already been in like numerous books, but I never have sat there and said, okay, let's talk about X. And so now people are coming at me saying, okay, you really need to. So I have.
I think that is a helpful discussion because for all of us, whether we're living with a chronic illness or not, we are making the decision on a daily basis, year to year, week to week, how we want to show up in the world. And there's no right or wrong decision, would be my guess there. But examining what's driving the decision is probably helpful. Okay, so, and I thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, so when we talk about a chronic illness, it's really interesting to think about this because this is something that never actually goes away for you. It's something that it's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, your entire life since the day you were born. And it's not something where you can choose to not deal with it in many, many ways. It's something that you're there. So I want to talk about mindset a little bit because there's no time in your life where this wasn't going on. But if you can, share with us if you remember times or seasons of your life where you thought about or you allowed yourself to dream or wish or yearn for the fact that you didn't have to battle this condition.
Yeah, so I think that's actually never been a part of my life where I sat there and consciously contemplated not having it because it was always so present for me.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it was present for me, not so much for others. And I kind of, it's like I have 67 surgeries, right? So when people go, I'm going to surgery tomorrow or whatever, it to me, it's just another day. Like literally, viscerally, it's another day. Do I get anxious? Yes. Like I have post-traumatic stress disorder from a lot of that stuff. I just learned that it's just, I have the mindset of it's just another day. Because if I didn't, I still wouldn't be on this earth.
Well,
You
and
know,
that's
when I was younger, there were many times I wanted to leave the planet.
okay.
You know, it's just like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And it got to a point where I had to choose, stop thinking about suicide and thinking about living. And at some point in my 40s, I finally made the conscious decision to choose to stay on Earth for a while. But yeah, when I was younger, it was, it, you know, I still have chronic depression. I am on antidepressants. I'm not afraid to say that. And it's something that when I try not being on them, my body really tanks. Unfortunately, that's the other thing I do have to deal with. I wish I'd not take all the medication I have to take, and I really practice Eastern and Western. But unfortunately, I do need to take my heart meds. I do need
Yeah.
to take my high blood pressure meds. Do I wish I didn't have to, and I could just do all Eastern in a heartbeat? I don't have that choice. So that's another thing that's been very interesting is because people look at me as very holistic. I'm a Reiki master, integrated, and you know, interfaith ordained minister, and I've done a lot of energy work and healing and all that. And then all, but yet I'm on all these Western medication. How do you balance practicing Eastern applications when you're actually taking all this Western medication? You know, and it's just like, it's like how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? Do you believe
Yeah.
in Dharma, fate, karma, Dharma, whatever it is? I've had to make choices that even though they aren't 100% in alignment with me, because I prefer not to take Western medication, I've had to come to terms with taking them. Because there were times in my life where I'd be like, screw you. Like, literally, I stopped taking all my medication. And within a month, I'd be in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, you trial that a few times. And after like the third attempt of doing it and you're in bed vomiting for 2 days, you finally go, you know, maybe I really just need to like suck it up and realize that I have, there's certain things I just have to do and be okay with that. And so, you know,
I don't know if I told you this joke when we did our conversation, the first conversation we had, or not. One of the funniest ways I've ever heard this comparison made. So Ellen DeGeneres, the comedian, was raised in Christian Science, I think. I think that's the philosophy where they
Scientology? No, it wasn't
maybe
Scientology. It was,
the one where they don't go to
you know,
doctors.
where they
They
don't do it. I
pray, right?
know
They
what you're
pray
talking.
for, yeah, they pray for medical, they pray for healing. And she broke her, she has a joke, she broke her leg. She had a compound fracture of her leg as a child. And she's just a kid, and her mom is coming over and she's saying, you know, we're going to pray for this. And she says, I'm going to pray that you drive me to the hospital. I probably got that punchline wrong. But, the thing is to highlight the difference between, there might be different philosophies, and then where do you draw the line? Like you were saying, is going to be an individual choice for people, and that you, and through reflection, have made the choice that for you to live the best life that you want, that includes taking these medications.
Now, the other side of that, though, is I can't take any vaccines. So that's like I couldn't get
Oh, because
COVID.
of the immunocompromised.
Yes.
Yes.
So if I took the COVID vaccine, for example, I would bleed out. I'm on blood thinners. So,
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, so.
yeah, most people don't realize that if you're on a blood thinner, you cannot take the COVID injection. And that's why a lot of babies die because mothers are nursing their baby after getting the injection. And the child would bleed out. And obviously, a lot of that wasn't talked about during that time. They didn't want to put out there that babies were dying, right? They didn't want to put out there that women were getting more breast cancer. They didn't want to talk about these things. They just basically put it underneath the carpet. But women, when we get a vaccine, it goes right into our lymph nodes. Arm vaccine, breast, lymph nodes, and armpit. So for us, it's very different. It really affects our immune system very differently than it does males.
Very interesting. Okay, so all right, so let's talk a little bit more about mindset. And I'm really just asking about your experience here, because I think it's helpful for people to understand, or to have exposure to. In the dark seasons, when you were in a spot where you were really questioning how you were going to move forward in these things, what was your experience in choosing to move forward?
Yeah, so I've been in and out of therapy my entire life. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like you get tired of it. It's like, okay, it's helped me for whatever I was working on in that moment. And then I walk away from it. I'm like, no, I need a break from all that. Making choices, it comes down to, for me anyway, it becomes quality of life. Like a lot of my, like I used to get this all the time when I go trying to find a doctor. You have no idea how hard it is for me to find a doctor because I see that list. A, they don't want to deal with it. It's too complicated. They don't know how to deal with it. Or I'm a hypochondriac. And then I kind of laugh and go, well, here's all the documentation. Here's all the CTs, the MRIs. Anything you need is right here. Like I didn't choose to just willy-nilly have 67 surgeries. They were necessary. The choice points though is I had to come to a point where that's why I wear like this says Aloha on it. I always wear colorful shirts and things with sayings on them as conversation starters. But that also helps me. Because when I see the colors, I smile. When I see this, silly slang on there, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And when I see other people wearing shirts with slangs on them that say, you are wonderful, you are enough, you are this, you are that, it's great because it really puts you in the mindset of being in a positive mindset. So that's what I've always done. I've really worked on my mindset to be positive. Am I negative? Of course, I have negative self-talk, like a lot of people do. However, a lot of times I'll say, okay, that's an intrusive thought. Next. So I really worked on mindset. I really worked on my language. Like I replace all buts with ands. Because when we say but, people go, oh, they're waiting for something bad to happen. If I say and, they're not expecting the worst.
All right, very good. So, one of the challenges of being a human being, right? I think this is part of the human experience, but this is just my opinion, is that it is challenging or tough for people to understand, sympathize, or empathize with situations or conditions that they've never experienced, right? So, for a silly example, I'm very fortunate and I've never experienced long-term hunger. I just don't know what that's like. And I know that I'm lucky for that situation, but I don't know. I've never experienced it. And I also don't know what life is like with a chronic disability, to tell you the truth. I'm very fortunate for that. And I consider that I own that blessing on my own life. But I think that that challenge of not being able to really understand and empathize because we don't have the shared experience is it's helpful to have people tell us what it is like. So tell us some of the ways that this condition, that you've lived with for 61 years, how does it impact your life today in your day-to-day life?
I'm tired a lot. I tend to sleep a lot because my body's just tired. So that affects me. I tend to get like most people are like, why aren't you available in the morning? Because I don't sleep well. I'm up every 3 hours. Every 2 to 3 hours I wake up. either from pain or breathing or something. So I tend to not get up till 9. So I'm sorry, I'm not available at 8. You want to do a call at 8, 9 a.m. That's not for me. I can do call at 11 a.m., noon. That's great. But before that, it's really a challenge for me because I still have to run my IV hydration. You know, there's things I have to do medically for myself. And I find that to be a challenge business-wise because people are like, why isn't she ever available in the morning? Like, I had to finally tell a couple of people that I was working with and say, this is why I'm running an IV with my pole back there, right? So I'm sorry, I'm not available. I can't get to my Zoom and have my IV pole here, and being on a call. This does not, it's not comfortable, you know? So it's stuff like that. It's just having to stand up for myself and say, you know, and be willing also to say no. I was saying yes to a lot of things that I honestly didn't want to do, but I did because I wanted to fit in or I, you know, and now I just don't go out as much. I don't do as much because I'm tired and I need to take care of my physical needs too. So it's a balancing act. It really is. There are times I go out more. There are times I'm shut in for like a week. I may never go anywhere for a week, all week, but then I always have. And the reason why that is because the other weeks I have a doctor's appointment. I may have 3 or 4 doctor's appointments in 1 week. I'm yeah. so exhausted by the end of that. The next week, I might not want to go anywhere. Like, I'm done. I'm staying in for the week, you know?
I think that one of the challenges is probably that there are plenty of times where I will say that I'm tired, right? And I have a feeling that my concept of tired and my description of that is probably different than your lived experience. But that's all I can do is academically be open and like sort of aware of it and aware of my lack of understanding and my lack of experience, because I don't know what it's like to live in your body. And so that's that. So let me ask you this. Did having congenital rubella syndrome impact your educational or career options that you felt were available to you?
Oh my God, that's actually one that I haven't been asked in a long time. And it was very frustrating. Every time I try and start college, I have an emergency surgery. I had so many incompletes. I wasted so much college money. I finally said, I'm done.
Okay.
I mean, what I started doing from the time I was in high school is I started doing certification courses because they're like 3 weeks, 4 weeks long. If I missed a day, I can make it up. And I just got a zillion certifications. You know, certified nurse's aide, certified home health aide, certified this, certified that. Because I realized every time I tried and go to college or do something that was a longer span of time, inevitably something would happen where I have, a chronic illness thing pop up. I'd have to have surgery. And yeah, and it was just, yeah. So my education, I had to go after my education. It wasn't like I could just go to college and be there for 4 years. That wasn't going to work.
So, and then so that is a very interesting thing to think about. And I remember when we flipped the switch and we took all the schools at the same time to virtual because of lockdown, a friend of mine who had raised a child with disabilities, she was so frustrated by that because she said, for 20 years, I asked the school district if we could have an adaptation because it was hard for us to get to school. And it was just, everybody said it was impossible. And, the technology wasn't there for a long time. And she said, but to see them flip the switch, she's out of the system. It wouldn't have changed her experience. But to see the world flip the switch overnight, it was an interesting thing for me to watch her reaction. She's like, they could have made adaptations for me. They could have made adaptations for my kid. And it takes me back to that situation. That's like, it's very hard for people to be aware and understand the things that are not directly impacting them in their own lives.
Yeah, like part of my freedom is taken away. I can't drive because of my eyes. I used to be able to drive and about 10 years ago, so I had to stop. I can't even...
Well, I want to say thank you for stopping.
I can't read the signs. I can't read the street signs.
Not everybody even would stop because of that, Carly.
But you know what I'm saying?
I do. But I have a family member who's in his 90s who should not be driving.
And is.
Not everybody would stop. And so thank you for understanding your own limitations, even though, yes, that is in a town in the United States of America, a very car-centered town. LA is a car-centered city. And that is a massive inconvenience. Does that same challenge come up in employment? that your schedule is driven by your medical situation.
Yeah, I've never worked a normal 9-to-5 job. I've always worked night shift.
Okay.
That way I could get done what I needed to during the day, or I've always been self-employed
All right.
because I never know what's going to come up. I can't start a job and then go, oops, okay, I'm going to be out for a month. Start a job. Oops, I'm going to be out for a week. Oh, I have surgery. Oh, I have another surgery. I mean, it just doesn't work. No one's going to want an employee that's unpredictably out. And unfortunately, my condition's unpredictable. So I can't say to you, I'm not going to have surgery for a year. I can't say that because last year I had five.
Yeah.
Right.
And do you find that as you've got a long life of experience, so this is not a great question, but do you find that the people in your support network, your friends, people who you know, do you find that they are understanding of this challenge, or do you feel like people are just like, why can't you do this?
Right. There's some that are, and I keep them in my circle, and there's some that are not, and I keep them kind of at the peripheral.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to have people that don't understand, don't want to understand, and want to say you're just making excuses. Okay. Well, come stay in my life for a day and then tell me I'm making excuses. But you can't live that way. You can't, be all passive aggressive and constantly challenge people. It's just like they're going to have their opinion. That's fine. Walk away, do your own thing.
Yeah. I
And I'm
mean,
okay.
there is that phrase that people will throw around. It's like, you never know what the people around you are going through. And so the lesson there is supposed to be, treat the people around us with compassion and kindness all the time. But like anything that requires paying attention and being aware to the situation in a way that a lot of people are not able to do.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
I've just learned to accept that. I've learned
Yeah.
to be okay with it. I mean, when I was younger, I was very passive aggressive because I was always defending myself.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say passive aggressive. I just say more defensive. I don't
Oh,
like,
yeah, I understand the difference. Yeah, I
yeah,
see what
not
you're saying.
passive aggressive, just very defensive. I always felt like I had to defend myself, always stand up for myself. And it got to the point where, like, why am I constantly in that mode of having to fight for my life? And part of it was symbolic because I've had to fight for my life. So
Yeah.
I had to, at some point, come to peace with my other part of my life going, I don't have to fight for my life here. That when I'm in surgery, okay, that's an appropriate time to fight for my life. But when I'm home, I can't be fighting all the time.
Yeah.
Fighting to fight is it's exhausting.
So let me ask you this question about that, because there is definitely, did your mom or the adults in your life when you were younger who were helping you grow up with this additional challenge in your life, when they were teaching you, because when they're teaching you to advocate for yourself, they were teaching you how to show up, you watch them do it, were they teaching you that sometimes you might have to push to be given the opportunity that you
No,
need?
unfortunately, my growing up was very interesting. My father was a brilliant businessman. Both my parents have passed. And as because of him being a brilliant businessman, we traveled all the time. So my parents were never home. They were always traveling. So we were with the help most of the time. When we lived overseas, you're in mansions with help, a man and a woman take care of woman take care of the house, a man take care of the grounds. We also had bodyguards because when you're at the level my father was overseas, you're a kidnap bait. That's why I went to private Catholic schools, and all that stuff there. So I left the United States when I was 5 years old. I didn't come back to the United States till I was 14. Talk about culture shock. I grew up in
Yeah.
Mexico, Venezuela, and Brazil. So when I came back to the United States, it was a massive culture shock to me because I came back to the United States in 9th grade of high school. I've been to private Catholic schools my entire life. My parents decided to put me in a public school system. I was
Okay.
just like, get me out of here. Get me out. So by my 11th year, I was back in private school. I mean, such culture shock for me. I was in South America, you kiss on each cheek, you hug. It's a very warm and intimate family-oriented relationship. And here it's not that. If you go try and kiss, as a young adult, kiss a guy in each cheek, they'd be like, oh, what the hell's wrong with her? Like, what does she want? Or, oh, she's promiscuous or, whatever. So, yeah, I had a lot of culture shock coming back to the United States.
I mean, some of it, if you, so I live in Miami. So if you, which is, you know, a city with the majority of people are foreign born here. And so our culture is shaped by that. But when I travel to the Midwest, some of my friends will remind me upon arrival, they're like, Amy, we do not kiss strangers that we are saying hello to in this. And I appreciate that reminder because it will take them by surprise. So anyway, since your 30s, you have worked as a life coach. We're gonna wrap up this conversation in a minute with my final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people the type of work you do with people and how people can find you after they hear this conversation.
Yeah, so my life coaching is a blend of Eastern and Western, depending on the person. I blueprint everything to each individual by building archetypes using multi-sensory work as well, finding out how you learn. Are you auditory? Are you kinesthetic? Are you verbal? You know, stuff like that. And I usually, people that tend to gravitate toward me are people that might have had trauma or stuck. They're in between something. They're grieving. They're going through a divorce. They're going through some sort of struggle. They're stuck. So I help people break through challenges and get to the other side and give them a toolbox of tools as we go along on how to deal with whatever it is that they're dealing with.
Very nice. All right. And you have a multi-sensory course that people can get from you if they reach out to you by email, and that information will be in the show notes. And I invite people who are in the audience to sign up for my email list because then you get this information direct to your email box. You don't have to find it in the show notes or the show description. Carly, are you ready for my
Yes,
final three questions?
I am.
All right, let's do it. All right. So I think I know, now that I know more about you, I think I know who you're going to answer this question, but we'll see. Do you enjoy nature? And if so, what type of nature would be your favorite? Ocean, beachy nature, forests and mountains, something that's sort of deserts or open plains or something else?
I enjoy the ocean and the mountains.
All right. My guess was going to be the oceans and the beaches. All right,
Yeah, the
very good.
ocean is, I can, well, because of my thing, I can't be in the ocean for a long time. I get seasick because my
Okay.
ears are damaged. However, I'm a fish in a pool. You cannot get me out of a pool when I was younger. And I love going to the beach and just walking the beach and just sitting with the water. I
All
can't
right.
be in the ocean for a long time, but I love the ocean. I love water. Well, I'm a
So
scorpion, so that's part water.
there we go. All right. So do you remember when you were a kid? I wonder if this question will work since you grew up overseas, but we'll see. Do you remember when you were a kid if you had a favorite after school TV show and what it was?
Well, that's a funny one because I didn't even know what Halloween was. I didn't have those experiences.
Right.
I came back to the United States like every summer for like a month, and then I would go back to the country we were in. And we traveled all over the countries, like literally everywhere. So I don't have a lot of those childhood experiences that other people had. So I can't say I really don't recall a TV show that
Yeah,
I
no,
don't.
nope, that is a US center. That's like summer camp. It's a US centric question. All right, very good. So apparently, scientists are trying to figure out a way to get humans on spaceship to Mars. The question is, if you were offered a chance to go to Mars, would you go?
I would absolutely go.
There you go. All right, that's it. Carly Alyssa Thorne, thank you so much for being a terrific guest today on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.